It's all about rugby.
This is the Robbie Hunter Paul Show on Pulse 1.
Hey, West Yorkshire, Robbie Hunter Paul here, and we're talking rugby league every Wednesday evening here on Pulse 1. And tonight we have a monster show beaming it live from the Providence Stadium. Some of the biggest names in the game, both playing and from yesteryear. And speaking about monsters, let's introduce tonight's first guest. He's a former Great Britain, England, Bradford Bulls and St. Helens superstar. An original member of the Awesome Foursome. He's big like a bear. His nickname Baloo for obvious reasons. Ladies and gentlemen, put your hands together for Huddersfield Giants head coach, Paul Anderson.
Thank you.
Baloo, an absolute pleasure to have you here with us this evening. How are you doing, pal?
I'm good, mate. I'm good. I'm not buying into this 40, mate, to be fair.
You're not buying into what?
Well, I'm 44 and I can remember watching you play.
Oh, please. It's not true. I remember when Baloo joined the Bradford Bulls right back in 1997.
Yeah.
97, he still had a quiff of hair on the top.
Oh, there we go.
And it was winter. It was winter for obvious reasons. We're training down at Appley Bridge.
Yep.
And Baloo's doing these big stride outs, you know, his first preseason with the team, doing these big stride outs. He's a big bloke anyway. And the quiff was just blowing like that. It was slowing you down. It was holding you back.
That's somebody else's story, that, Robbie. You've stolen that, haven't you?
I'm not saying a thing.
I think it was one dependent on how fast I was running, as how high it went. It was jogging, it had a little quiff, and it was running, it was up there.
Yeah. I've seen photos of it, actually.
A little bit like yours at the moment.
Oh, it's giving me grief. We can't hold back those sands of time. I am 40. I'm embracing it. I was explained Tahi Rehana, because obviously Tahi was with us, with the Bulls at that time. And he was training in that preseason. It was his first preseason. And he posted a message to me on Facebook saying, the 40s are the new 20s. I said, I can't be, because I'm only just recovering from my 20s. So we'll move quickly forward onto the rugby. But before we look forward to how your Giants career as head coach is going on, let's have a look back. You started life as a youngster with the Rhinos. You then went on to Halifax. I think I played you a couple of times in the A-teams, danced around you, made you look like a bit of a fool. You joined the Bulls in 1997 and then left to leaving the Bulls in 2004 to finish a hugely successful career as a player in 2006. And then you joined the Huddersfield Giants coaching staff in 2007.
Correct.
Is that right? That's all accurate.
That's perfect.
Looking back at your playing days, and it can be from wherever in your playing days, what were your highlights?
I think the number one thing for me is when I first came to Bradford, been pottering around, been at Leeds, been at Halifax, and I was very, very fortunate enough to come here with a club that was going forward and a coaching staff that was learning to learn people. And it was Matty Elliott was here and Nobby was assistant and all the rest of them that was there on them times, but it was the first time you really ever got coached and got taught things. And before it was just run to that little Kiwi there and just see what you can do and damage.
You're talking about Henry.
You know what I'm talking about. Just run at the little fellas and just get over the top of them. But there's a little bit more finesse to it and there's still that in the game. But it was the first time really being coached and enjoyed 8 years here and enjoyed another two at St. Helens after that.
Do you reckon that there was a reason why it sort of planted the seed for you to become a coach?
No, it's the last thing I ever thought I'd be doing. It's just about life's about opportunities. Sometimes you got to take them, sometimes you don't. And obviously, I was here, didn't finish my career too well here. It was just, I know where I left, you understand things now. And you get to 33 and you're not doing so well, it's time to move on and let the kids go.
You're being very politically correct there, you know.
They're them things that you now understand with age and understanding with the positions that you're in, and you understand them things. But it was something that. Was usually enjoyable. Was 8 years here and just on that 8 years doing offense and stuff against you. I never touched you once.
You're very kind. I think that's a good thing because it's one thing when the big fellas get. Robbie, you know what I'm talking about. Leon, you're 6 foot something, so you don't really count.
What's that? What are you talking about?
Well, we're talking about when the big fellas get a hold of the little fellas.
I've got a little story about Blue, actually.
Go on. Share it with us.
I was 15 years old and I was still at school. And Matt Elliott said to me, right, we're going to Lanzarote. Would like you to come with us. So I had a week out of school, and I thought, oh, fantastic, I'm getting out of school, beauty. I'm going training with Bulls, even better. So we had a game on field in Club La Santa, Lanzarote. And I think I took a carry from dummy half, and I was fast, and I was agile. I was really buzzing about playing.
You were lightning, come on.
I was lightning, yes. Anyway, I must have sidestepped around blue. He must have missed me. I went flying upfield, and I got to the fullback. I tried to get around fullback, and he tackled me. And as I stood up to play a ball, and I only must have been about 12 stone went through, this big 120 kilo bloke just came past me and went, boom! Don't do that again. And I realised then.
With his Ponty accent.
And I realised then, don't be good sidestepping big forwards like him, and he would nearly knock me out. I nearly cried, actually. I've always remembered that.
But Blue, obviously, we grew up in a game where there was a system, wasn't there? You paid respects to your elders.
Yeah, that was, like I say, he didn't do it again, did he?
And I've always remembered it.
I did it. Yeah. I did, but I was a little bit older than you, Leon. I got away with a little bit more.
Yeah, let's say that, yeah.
You're watching what you're saying.
Yeah. We're live, are we?
Yeah, we're live, yeah. Be careful. Yeah. We are live. During that golden era, you know, from 1997 to 2004, you know, 97, you were with me. It was where the club grew. Probably about 2000 was when we cracked that nut. We started winning silverware. Does any of those games come back to you as, moments that stick out?
I can remember a fair few. I was here earlier today and just sat in the car park and looking down on the field and just reminiscing and looking at the stands and taking back the Leeds games when it used to be 24,000 in there. And I can remember one when we played them on the Saturday or Sunday in a Challenge Cup semi and got beat. Then we had them back here on the Wednesday and absolutely towed them up. And you're just thinking about things like that and seeing the 20,000 in here and them good days and how enjoyable they were. They're the things that you enjoy. Obviously, there have been some real cold. And one thing, I've just been to the toilet out there, and I remembered how cold Ottle is now. So it's that come back pretty quick as well. But yeah, seeing the place full and having them memories, which are real fond memories, is good things to look at.
So when you decided, so obviously you went off, then you spent a couple of seasons at St. Helens. What was it that made you decide that coaching was going to be your forte? What was it that that impassioned you to think about coaching as a job?
I don't really know, to be fair. It was, like I said, you're going to say then, I lost my track before, but it was about opportunities, and I was playing here, and before I left here, I was contemplating retirement. I'd got a job lined up. I was going to work in a power station, and then I got a phone call from St. Helens, Eamon McManus, around me and said, do you want to come here for a year? I think, go on then, why not? And obviously it was from there, but I think one of the things that got me going a little bit was the coaching staff at Saints. Mm-hmm. I think they put me as an older player. They put a lot more responsibility on me, which probably people like yourself who see the pictures everywhere and whatever, that was where all the responsibility was. I was just happy to go lucky here and just go on my job and we're grumpy and that was it. But there I got a lot more responsibility put upon me. And I was looked at doing a lot more things, got introduced to a lot more things about off-field and the leadership things. And it was from there, and when the second year I was there, I could have gone again with another year there, but there was an opportunity to go on the staff at Huddersfield, which, like I say, if that had come, I might have kept on playing, but you never know.
Yeah, well, I think we kind of skirted over a little bit there, Robbie, about Blue's career at St. Helens, because I joined him for a year in 2006, my first year, and don't underestimate the impact that he had in the St. Helens team. I know that here we used very much as a big guy, running the ball up.
But he was used as a donkey.
But around about that year, 2006, he changed the game. He used a lot of pinning. He was passing to his halfback, Sean Long, were pushing support. Lee Gilmore pushing support. And that's when the game started changing. And we didn't see much of Blue's hands here, but he's got very, really good hands. And over in Saints, he's very, very well, massively high regarded for the two seasons he had there. So, Blue, did you really? I know I enjoyed my time at Saints, and I know you must have done.
Yeah, obviously two very. When I was there, it wasn't because of me, but we had success because we was winning games and obviously winning trophies. But the key with that was that the coaches tried to. That was the style of play that they had. This club was a slightly different. Saints was Ian Millward wanted you to play. I can remember once training at Saints and there was a loose ball on the floor and I dived on it, which you would do and it's what we coach now. But I got an absolute rollicking off Basil because he said, you should have passed it to somebody. So I've just secured the ball. He says, that's not how we play here. So it made you aware of that they want to keep the ball alive.
Would you say, Blue, two of your best years of playing as well, I'd say, I reckon?
Yeah, I think because of that, of opening my game up a little bit and not just being that one dimension, it allowed me to express myself a little bit more. Yeah. The coaching staff there, first with Basil and Ian Millward, and then obviously secondly with Daniel Anderson. And it it's the game that they played. They wanted you to play. They just didn't want you to be bashing bars. They wanted a little bit of intricacy and a little bit more skill out of you, which obviously I enjoyed because it gave me another string to my bow and gave me another couple of years playing.
No, I get that because I was coached by Ian Millwood as well, and he was a very proactive sort of coach and trying to encourage things, and also Daniel Anderson for New Zealand. But there was one game, and it talks about both things. One game when Bradford played against St. Helens at St. Helens, and two instances. The first one I'm going to say, I skinned you. I come off my left, you were chasing me across. I did a dummy on the inside, and all I heard from behind was, you little Kiwi such and such. But the other one was, the way we used you here was as a blunt force instrument. Yeah. Send Ballou up, let him get a quick play of the ball, get down on his nose, scatter people, and play off the back of it. Now, I was playing hooker at the time, and the last thing I was going to do was let you get to speed up. So I'm just thinking to myself, well, here comes Ballou. He's going to do one thing and one thing only, run over top of me. So I flew out of the line to actually get you, bite you around the ankles, and basically I didn't tackle, I didn't hit. I basically just dived at his knees and got tangled up, and he fell over. But I got up to you fast, and you just tipped it on. And I just thought to myself, where did that come from?
Smarter than I look, Robbie.
Well, you've got to be. You're a Super League coach. But come on, explain to me. What is it about all these donkeys that are now... I mean, we're talking about you guys just aren't good coaches. You're the top four coaches. Brian Mack, yourself.
I think the number one thing for, as you said before, and be careful calling us donkeys, because I've seen another one just walk in. So just be careful of that. Because once we get you, you're not going anywhere, you know that. I think the thing is that I've been fortunate to play with, obviously, Leon and yourself and Stu and a hell of a lot of very, very good players, and I've been able to work with some good coaches as well. And one of the things I've figured out is that it's very, very easy to complicate things. What you have to do is keep things simple. And if you try and put something across to the players that you don't understand, what do you expect them to do? So the art of coaching is not to show how clever you are, it's to try and keep it as simple as you can and try and get the best out of the individual. Robbo will tell you some of the reviews that we do, and some I've been guilty in the past of pointing the finger and being too heavy. I've also probably been guilty in the past of being too soft. But the reality of it is if somebody comes up with something and it don't quite come off, you ask the question, what were you thinking? And they say, oh, well, I was thinking this. All right, then, no issues with that. Make sure you execute it better next time. So you don't want people to not want to play, which I've probably been there as well as a coach. But what you've got to do is make sure that when they do get in them positions, they've got the confidence to want to do it, then there's confidence to execute it properly. So it's about giving them the scope to want to play, but within some limitations in regards to initial structure, because ultimately the game is very, very simple. You run at little fellas, you run over them and get a play the ball.
Yeah, he's right. I'm amazed. I'm hearing all of this dialogue come out. And basically, when we played together, it was, Ballou, hit it up.
Okay.
That was it, the extent of it. But I got to say, let's talk Huddersfield Giants. Big season for you guys. Obviously, you have been over the past, three or four years, considered a top four team. Is this the year? Obviously, we don't know. We don't have a crystal ball. But are you confident moving forward for this year that you at least hit the ground running? Because your preseason matches, you've played very well.
Yeah, we've had a good start. I think one of the things I've been guilty of the past in regards to pre-season, when you analyse things, is, Robbo might tell you this, we probably didn't do enough as a team. And what we've done this year is we've got real rolling as a team. We've hit the ground running in regards to our prepping pre-season game. We've got a fair start to the year, first two games are Saints and Wigan, so we know we've got to be good. So that's where we are. One of the things that we've managed to do over the last few years, just as a collective with the players and staff, is we've got a level of consistency.
Can I just mention below? I thought one thing, looking back at your last injury, you lose your first three games.
Yeah, you beat us, didn't you, Frank?
I know we beat your first game.
Oh, Leon was coming into the studio, he had his collars popped up, he was acting like 10 men.
But I remember,
two forward passes and an obstruction.
The third game you lost, I think you were live on Sky, and they came in and did an interview, and I was quite impressed with this, I must admit, and he said to him, are you worrying, you've lost your first three games? You said, listen, there's 20-odd more games to go. We've got to win them. We can still make top four. And I thought that gave a lot of confidence looking on the outside as of just the players watching. And I thought that were a really smart move that must have given your squad a lot of confidence that you still had the belief in them.
Oh, it didn't matter how many games you lose. You can't lose focus of what you want to be. And I remember that. I remember now you've said it. I can come back to me. I think we said you can still win minor premiers and get
the
league leaders.
That's right. I was impressed with that because it shows confidence.
But what it says is you've got confidence in your group. Yeah, we've lost a couple of games. You're always going to lose a couple of games, but you don't want to throw the baby out just because you've lost some games. You've got to stick to your systems and stick to your beliefs, and you had confidence with them players. One of the things I got off Nathan Brown was I used to have an emotional team on a Monday after a loss, so I'd make 13 changes. and one of the things he said to me was that, yeah, but you're going to put all these young fellas in and you're going to bring all the old boys back the week after, so you just got to stick with them and show them confidence of what you're going to do.
Well, Baloo, it's been absolutely brilliant having you here on the Robbie Hunter Paul Show. Fantastic. Once again, also, best of luck for the upcoming Super League season. I've never seen Robbo so quiet. He's obviously intimidated by you.
Once the leaves, I can talk.
Stay around. We'll be back soon, and we'll be catching up with the Raffa Bulls captain, Adrian Patel. All that and more coming up after this break.
Big names and big stories from the world of rugby league. This is the Robbie Hunter Paul Show on Pulse One.
Hello everybody, RHP here, and we're live from the Providence Stadium in the Premier Bar behind the Providence stand. And I'm live with Leon Price and Lucky Luke Robinson. Gents, before we bring in our next guest, he's already in situ, I just want to discuss yesterday's breaking news. Now in the AM, Steve McNamara confirmed he's not been offered the job as a coach, as the England coach. And probably the most successful modern Australian coach of all time, NRL coach anyway, Wayne Bennett, has been confirmed for the next two seasons to fill in some type of coaching role with England Rugby League. So for the Four Nations at the end of this year and the World Cup in 2017, what are your individual thoughts on that? Robbo, we're going to start with you.
Well, anybody who knows me knows I don't like Antipodeans. I don't like horses.
Whoa! I'm sorry, Robert. Antipodeans as well.
You're nearly British now. You know,
is British. Yes.
Yeah, when you're nearly there, so you're all right.
Well, I have been here longer than I lived in New Zealand.
I'm forever sick of people telling me that they're just better at everything and they're better than us, and we fall for it. So I'm more for the English, but I do understand what a fantastic coach is and the pedigree that he comes with. If it becomes a little bit of a scenario that happened at Bradford, like Brian Smith sort of changed the sort of face of the club, didn't he? Mm-hmm. He brought not only the players on, but he created a sort of coaching dynasty. If that can happen in our game, then obviously it's going to be beneficial for us. If he takes an assistant on board and makes him great, then fair enough. But I'd like to see an Englishman in charge.
Really. Well, let me ask you this question first. Steve McNamara spends the last 4 years, 5 years, I think, as an England international coach, puts the foundations in place, changes the whole setup of it all, and then finally gets to the team to the position where they can beat the world number ones. Now, does that not constitute he deserves a chance to have a go at the 2017 World Cup? I mean, that's the question I'm asking.
He's a good manager. I've been under him. He's a good manager, is Steve McNamara. Like, you know, he's very good at sorting, you know, the logistics of, you know, what to train, and he got Loughborough going, all them things going. The problem I think it is I don't think there's the fans, especially when you read on the forums and everything else, there's not enough legitimacy attached to that beating New Zealand because of the side they brought over. Wrongly or not, because at the end of the day, when you play national rugby, you know, whoever's put in front of you, play against them, and if you beat them, then you should get all the plaudits. But I think that because they came over without Johnson, without Foran, without all the star players, somehow it just hadn't held him in the, you know, the weight that it should have done, really.
Leon, what are your thoughts on the whole situation?
I think it's a good decision, in my opinion. I think is one of the best, well, if not the best coach of all time, is available to be contracted by the Rugby League, by the RFL.
So you're just throwing out your identity as an Englishman?
We're always going to be English, but we want to win, don't we? In your career, you don't get a chance to be coached by very many good coaches. So hopefully coming over here... My biggest issue with the old rugby league thing is rugby league's not a team. The England rugby league team, it's not about being a club team. It's about picking players that are on form at that time. If he comes over and picks the players, not on names, not on clubs, but the players that are actually on form that deserve to be picked, then I'm happy, because that's what England's about, getting your chance once you've played well in Super League. If he does that, I'm happy.
So who do you think missed out last year that should have been in there?
Maybe Liam Watts at our club deserved maybe a chance. I know that Elliot Whitehead 2 years ago deserved a chance when he only played about 10 minutes in the Test match. There's been players littered throughout the last couple of Super Leagues. That Danny Brough, who never got his chance when he should have been playing over the last two or three years.
And they were opted for Rangi Chase instead.
Yeah, just these players that have not been picked consistently over the last couple of years that should have done, in my opinion.
Okay, are you saying then that was the sort of the nail in the coffin then? the fact that that approach wasn't taken?
I don't know. I'm not too sure. I'm just saying I'm glad, because now I'm hoping that the players that are banging form at that time of the season that deserve a spot will be picked. No matter what club they're playing at, if they're playing at a big club or a bottom club, if you're in form and you're having the best season of your career and you're getting make into a dream team, then you should be playing for England.
Well, let's have a different look at it. Wayne Bennett, most successful NRL coach of all time, but coaching an international team is very different.
I think it's very different. I think that it takes a different coach. You know, it's all right having the most tactical coach in the world, but you've only got us for a limited amount of time. You know, but I've been in that the England setup. It ain't always about creating the best game plan, and you don't have time to coach and improve players. It's about bringing that camaraderie, that sort of, even though in a team, bringing that team ethos and everything. But you know, throughout his career, really, he seems to have brought that. He's not only been very tactically aware, he's also brought his teams together, and they seem to want to play for him. He seems like a bloke that, even when he lets players go from his team, they still keep in contact with him years, 10 years later, they're still ringing him up for advice. You know, they seem to buy into not only his philosophy, but I think him as a person.
I got to ask the question then, and this is something to ponder, why hasn't he been offered the Australian international job?
He's done that though, hasn't he? He's ticked that box.
He'll do them all now, won't he? Well, I know he's done New Zealand.
He's sat as a mentor. That's one of the things that I find dangerous for New Zealand. He sat over the last couple of years as a mentor for Stephen Kearney. So he knows all of New Zealand's tricks. He's probably developed them. And I think that makes it very dangerous for New Zealand and a bonus for England.
I just think it's a really good choice by England. I think if there's one person who could coach a team and galvanise a squad together, because most of the time, like Luke says, the England Rugby League team don't need much coaching. What it needs is breaking down the barriers of, I play for Leeds, we don't like you, Bradford. I play for Saints, we don't like you, Wigan. When you break them barriers down between the players, because that's what you talk to each other most of the year, when you break them barriers down, you get people together. You don't actually need that much coaching. If you can break that down, which I think he will do, because he's a very, very respected man, I think, you know, we're on to a winner.
In my time, they used to just take us out for a drink, and that was enough.
Yeah, well, it's not like that anymore, is it?
The good old days, eh? Okay, well, I'm going to take a straw, just a simple poll in the room. We've got probably circa around 40, 50 people in this room. Let me just see, we're all rugby league fans here. Put your hands up if you're excited about Wayne Bennett taking over the England coaching job. So put your hand up. Right up, let me see it. That's about 50% of
half
the room.
Half and half.
We're split down the middle. That's cool.
Patriotic, aren't we?
What did you guys... Oh, actually, I just asked you guys. Okay, well, we'll move on. Our next guest. Now, I did say that Adrian Patel will be up, but he's just caught in traffic, so he's going to get here as soon as he can. Our next guest is one of the early stars of the Super League. Early stars. I'm sure I used to pay to watch him play. He's a former England international, Salford and Castleford Tigers stalwart. Please put your hands together and welcome to the top table, Darren Rogers, ladies and gentlemen.
Hey, good.
Thank you.
And welcome to the show also, Darren. Darren, you now work as a community development liaison officer, is that right?
No, not really. I'm really lucky to come to the Bradford Bulls. I'm really excited to the opportunity. My actual title is Education and Apprenticeship Manager. But just before that, Robbie, there's 1 year between you and I. So don't start saying I'm the OAP of this group. I would like to put that on record.
Well,
I'm
are
only
you?
41.
Yes, but that makes you the OAP of this group.
Not disagreeing.
You're older
with
than
that.
Me. You're older than Leon. You're older than Robbo.
Are you sure with Robbo? Have you seen
him? Definitely older than me.
Yeah, I know. I'm with you there, Darren. I'm sure I was
definitely
there.
Older than me.
I'm staring up at Robbo, and he was as tall as he was then, as he is now. Darren, before we get to your career post Super League, let's have a look back at your Super League before moving on after rugby. What was your highlight that you recognise over the course of your career?
Playing for my country, by far. I've played with some, like, speaking to...
Okay, before
Leon.
You go into that then, okay, join this conversation. What are your thoughts on Wayne Bennett coaching? You've pulled on St. George's
jersey.
Cross. You've worn that over your heart. What are your thoughts?
I mean, listen to both their points. I agree with both of them. My personal point is he's coaching over in Australia, same with Steve Mack. And we aspiring to be the best country at rugby league. And I just think about, obviously, the rugby league team underneath the rugby team. How are we bringing them young bucks through? So I think the rugby, our England coach, should be the coach infrastructure of our potential stars and through. And I don't know how Wayne Bennett will be able to do that, coaching, obviously, over in Australia.
Boys, Darren's got a valid point. The England coach in the past, over the past few years, David Waite, Steve McNamara, they've been responsible for the full development, the whole system. How is a coach who's a full-time NRL coach at the top of the tree in one of the biggest brands in rugby league going to be able to deliver that for England?
Yeah, it's a funny one. I kind of agree with him, really, because I know that speaking to a few of the England boys over the last few years, they'd have Skype sessions with Steve McNamara. You know, and that's how they'd be talking to the coach, which is just, you know, like...
Bizarre.
It's weird, isn't it? You know what I mean?
Coaching via Skype.
You're looking on a computer screen, he's talking through, you know, your games and how you've been going and all that. I don't really buy into that. But then again, I am with Leon, as it's Wayne Bennett. So is he going to just, you know, is he going to come... Is he allowed to do it because it's Wayne Bennett? Mm-hmm. And is he going to bring something totally different when he comes over? But I do agree with Darren, you know, like, if somebody's in this country, can not only tap into the current stars that are coming through, but the sort of bunch below it that the next few years after as well.
You can just picture it, eh? Jimmy Lowes, who acted as an assistant England coach this year, running around the training pitch with a iPod. Tablet, iPad, with Steve McNamara yelling out from you know, half a world away. It's absolutely amazing. That was a very visual thing I did, and we're on the radio. Probably doesn't work, eh? Back to you, Darren. So, you know, a valid point. I think it's something that I guess is going to be developed over the... We'll find out, I guess, over the course of the next few months exactly how that setup's going to be. So I asked you that original question, your highlight of your career.
Yeah, I'm playing for my country. I was very lucky to play, obviously, against you all and with you all. But playing in the World Cup 2000... It was my highlight and probably my low light as well. And like we spoke earlier and stuff like that, and I know you're going to mention this, but we got to the semi-final.
Against who?
Obviously, as you can guess, Kiwis and stuff. And we didn't play well that day. And you
we
ran...
We pumped you, eh? We
yeah,
pumped you.
Yeah, okay.
You can say it.
Yeah,
say okay. It loud.
No. I think your ego's big enough.
I come off the bench. I wasn't even really a starting player then.
So playing for my country, and that was a massive opportunity for me to show. And playing for Cass at the time, you said earlier that the top four teams were picked for the country. So it was really nice being not one of them top four teams and getting paid. And there were only me out of the top four teams that got into the pinnacle of, like, obviously being a professional sportsman for rugby league. So that was a highlight for me.
So describe, I mean, I've asked these guys what it was like to represent their country. What was it like for you the first time you put on that England jumper, standing there as the national anthem got sung out?
Unbelievable. I mean, playing with people you look up to and play against and aspire to get there. And when you get to that, it's not just putting that shirt on. It's that telephone conversation, it's that letter to say you've actually been put for your country.
Could and you then, sleep?
I was 26, so I suppose I got past that stage. But yeah, I mean, like telling your girlfriend, your wife and your family that you've been put for your country and they've really like looked after you since I started at age 7. So it was a massive journey for me and the pinnacle when I obviously played and fought World Cup.
That's cool. You live and played through the era of change from winter into summer. You are that old. What was your take on the changes made in 2015? And be careful. Remember, you work for a club that operates in those changes.
No, I mean, obviously, it's a big challenge. And I do think that it's been a massive eye-opener. And
First, just before you get into that, just what was it like making the change from winter to summer and then the changes last year?
I mean, that were hard. We played the winter, then straight into a summer. We had a month off and your body were wrecked. But the principle to it, I think, is outstanding because you get more spectators. As players, you're playing in the warmth and training in the cold, vice versa. But you do get a lot more better players, a lot more better attitude and application on the field. And I just think it's a better environment to play rugby league rather than going to the Shea and it's on a slant and it's there's no grass on there.
Yeah, I'm from Halifax, be careful.
And you slip and then
very proud of the show. Yeah.
And Fielding is too, so be careful of him. He's about somewhere as well.
I've got my bodyguard.
I can see him.
But yeah, so I think it's been, for the last, like, obviously 20 years, I think it's been the highlight of rugby league going forward, a new era. And like Robbo, like obviously the little ones, Robbie Burrows, they can run around the big ones so they don't get slotted in the muck in at the share.
Well, you were a big outside back yourself, so there wouldn't have been many players that you feared playing against.
No, there wasn't, and I've been asked this number of questions. I liked the bigger players, Leslie Vanacore or Vicorna, because they were going to run at you. And you knew you didn't have to you just had to stand and wait to be knocked on your derriere if they are going to knock you. But the two people I hated playing against were Darren Albert and Brett Dallas. They had outstanding pace. And as a winger, we always got told, touchline's your friend. So you back your pace to get them into touch. But them two, if you give them an inch, they take a yard. So I always played outside the man and got them pushed into running to big fellas.
Yeah, to let someone else do all the hard work.
Yeah, definitely. And
It's not my fault. I pushed him inside. Don't blame me.
Leon, you played the wing yourself, didn't you? So you knew exactly what to do.
Yeah,
there.
It's not my fault, is it? It's him inside me.
But no, we were called muscly touch judges because they thought we just spoke, obviously, to the touches.
Let's be
and
honest.
Stuff
Come
like
on.
That.
Come on. What is a winger? He is just a muscly linesman.
Okay, I beg to differ, but we'll talk off air instead of on air. But no, I mean, obviously, every single position is hard in different ways. You as a halfback, all you have got to do is talk and pass. I don't think it's that hard. Okay?
At least remember, you're surrounded by halfbacks here.
At least I have to catch the ball and run it in. You don't. You just tell everybody to run specific places.
He's got a point, though. We sort of stand there and we point where they were everyone to do the hard work.
You know, yeah,
and once the hard work's done, then we come in and get the glory.
Yeah, we're bright. You know, it's not our fault we're brighter than them, is it?
That's why we look like we do and they look like they do. I get it. Now, what made you decide to move from the playing side into the community arm of the sport?
Well, as you know, we all grow old. And family came first as well. But basically, it was something that when I was younger, I've always wanted to teach. I've always wanted to coach. And when I finished age 32, I was very opportunity to get...
So in real numbers, that's 36.
32. My
you
body,
don't have to lie anymore.
No, I'm telling the truth. Like you're saying you thought 40, and I think we all look at you. You might look
Facebook
a little bit older.
Facebook said it was 40, so it's 40.
But no, I mean, I just thought, like Blue were talking about, I didn't really think that I would become a teacher so quickly after being... obviously retired. I'm very lucky that I'd educated myself through my playing career, and then when I finished, I went to university and carried it on. So and what I do now at Bradford is from myself regarding the education and what we do. I think it's really good that the boys do get educated, and I think it's a massive opportunity for our up-and-coming stars at the Bulls to do it.
Now, I think it's hugely important also, but I don't think there's a true appreciation to the value of what community arms and foundations do for their clubs. So can you just describe exactly the role that a foundation community arm of the business does for the club itself?
A lot of people think foundations are a part of the club. They're a massive pivotal part. They're a massive way how we can get the rugby league fraternity in a massive way in Bradford. They're going to a lot of schools. We get funding from elsewhere. You're doing a lot of funding, raising a part of it. We've got a really good CEO of, obviously, Mark Winder. He does a real mass work behind the scenes that pull in money that helps support the Bradford community and really, really enjoy what he does as well.
You would argue also, I mean, for a lot of people out there, they don't understand. They think, well, if they're playing good rugby, people come and see them. But that's not necessarily true. Unless you're a rugby fan, you're only interested in rugby. And what you guys do is you go into the schools and you promote the sport, explain it, you encourage people to come along through a number of different avenues, whether it's by coaching them and giving them that feed, pushing them to a community club, but also offering them special deals or even just a day out.
Yeah, I mean, the foundation, we do all sorts of things with, obviously, the ethnic community. We do heritage. We've got an education department, which I run. We've got the community department. So it's not just we just go into schools. There's a massive opportunity to get out into the Bradford community with the badge of obviously the Bradford Bulls, and at the moment we're in exciting times. We're really enthusiastic and we want to really strive to make Bradford as good as there was in the past.
Now, you guys, obviously, Leon, Luke, over the course of the years that you've been with some of the top clubs, you must have been involved in a lot of community projects. Can you extol the values of it also?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, one of my first ones that I got involved with at Wigan were an anti-bullying campaign. You know, there were a lot of kids in Wigan.
Kind of
like
what Stu Fielding does to you. He bullies you.
Yeah, give over. I bully Stu.
Fielding.
But no, that was obviously the importance of that at the time at Wigan. I was only a young kid, so I didn't really fully grasp it. And I was only 17, and I didn't realise how many children actually suffer with it, you know, suffer with the bullying side of it, and how many were even taking their own lives at Wigan. It was a big push that the Wigan Council did, and that was my first sort of taste of it, really, so it was great.
It is incredible, because obviously as a rugby player, and the majority of us that grow up, we don't get bullied. We got big mates.
Yeah, well, you don't.
You're a physical specimen yourself growing up. You know, you play a physical game. You're known as not one of the guys to be bullied. It's a different culture to you, so it must have been an eye-opening experience
for you. I think especially when you play a sport, you're in that team environment. Anyway, when you're at school, you know, you're 12, 13-year-old, you're in a team environment, you're playing sport, so you're kind of left alone a little bit, aren't you, like you said. So, yeah, a massive eye-opener for me, and something that I'm extremely grateful that Wigan give us an opportunity to do as well, because even though I was 17 at the time, probably no one knew who I was. The kids, when you walked in with the likes of Andy Farrell and, you know, Dennis Betts and players like that, the kids were amazed, and what they said went a long, long way.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Darren, what projects are you working on at the moment?
At the moment, we're working, obviously, as I said earlier, with an Ethnic Rugby League. That's basically trying to get engaged to BME. It's a massive, fantastic opportunity to go forward. We've also started with a CPD enrollment at the moment, which is called Embed the Pathway. But just to add on, like obviously what Robbo's just said about these younger people coming through, like a massive part of my role with the education side is that we're trying to basically get an education going forward as well with the players and other people in the Bradford community. So we run a small little college, if you say, but we try to really engage people who want to work in the sporting community and the sporting environment. And obviously what we do at the Bradford, we've got a massive opportunity with the Bradford Bulls tag that if you want to go into obviously media, if you want to go into a corporate side or coaching or whatever, we're actually in the business end of the sporting industry. And I can't think of anywhere better then obviously where the education department is, it looks out onto the odds. So where in the past there's been so many good memories for the Bradford Bulls, and I just think it's really inspiring that what we're trying to do here.
So explain to me, what advice do you have for professionals or anyone else wishing to get into the community foundation arm of the sport?
No, obviously we're a massive part of that. Regarding the first question about aspiring people that want to get into the sporting community, we've got two cohorts. We've got players, Advanced Apprenticeship in Sporting Excellence, basically our up-and-coming stars that we educate. We give them an understanding of how to basically portray as a rugby league player, nutrition, or how to eat properly. And let's be honest, some of them think McDonald's is good for you and stuff like that. And I think
there's lettuce in there, there's beef.
Yeah, of course. And yeah, and obviously how to portray themselves, how to ask questions, media. We give them BTEC course, but also on the other hand, we do try to get out into the schools, we've got another cohort of people who are aspiring to just go to, like I say, in the sporting community or aspiring to go to university. And we've had some really good case studies last year in regarding two of our non-elite, if you say, have been enrolled by the foundation. So we've got that continuity of you're doing the course and you've got a job, paid job after it. And then we've got three other players that have aspired to go to university, got the three distinction stars, which is the highest award you can get, and they're now at university like Leeds Beckett's and Sheffield Hallam, and they're aspiring to be teachers, and one's trying to be a physio. So it's a massive opportunity, and we're trying to get as many good people to come and help support the actual Bradford Bulls, because like I said, they do additional stuff, which is helping on match days, helping all the Bulls parades, and helping everybody in the sporting Bradford Bulls community.
Leon, I've got to ask you, you've obviously done the hard yards at Bradford, and I know we used to spend a lot of time nearly every single week going into the schools, going into the community. How big a part has working within the community, especially you being a Bradford lad, has played a part as your professional career?
Yeah, I think it's just something I took for granted as a player growing up, because that's what we did when I was 15 and I started as a young YTS player here at the Bradford Bulls. We were constantly in schools, probably two or three schools a week. And then once I turned professional, played for the professional ranks, we were into schools probably twice a week minimum. So it's something that I grew up with. And then when I went to Saints, I think it kind of dropped off. And I think it plays a massive part in the community and getting the children involved. Seeing Bullman, seeing Bullboy come into your school with a Super League trophy or a Challenge Cup trophy, talking about how he can come and watch the Super League stars and showing them the way into sport, really, and it's something we took for granted at the time, I think.
As a father, and obviously everybody on the panel here are fathers, does that make it have a little bit more impact when you can see the influence that maybe guys of your profile can have on youngsters?
Yeah, absolutely. I think if you were to look now at the crowds, I think the children coming to watch the games with their parents. And back in the day when the balls were buzzing, when we got massive crowds, I remember it used to be bring your kids and for free, and we used to pack the place out and there'd be kids running around on Subway thing, and it was just the atmosphere was brilliant. And I think that had a lot to do with us going to schools, giving out them tickets, bringing in Bullman, bringing in the trophies. And I think it always helps when you're winning, doesn't it? And I think probably Leeds Rhinos have probably got that now, where they can go in with a Super League trophy, and well, they won triple last year, didn't they? So, you know, they can go into the schools with a trophy and run in a Rhino, and it helps with your crowds, I think. Absolutely.
I agree. So we all agree that foundation plays a massive part. My thanks for Darren being with us this evening. A loud round of applause, ladies and gentlemen. Been absolutely brilliant. We'll be back after this break, and we'll be speaking to the Bradford Bulls captain, Adrian Purtell. All that and more coming soon.
The Robbie Hunter Paul Show on Pulse 1 with Provident. Lending a helping hand since 1880. Visit provident.co.uk.
Danny Milo Show.
This morning, James was the first ever person on our Fat Brain Game leaderboard.
You are now, yes, my friend, the proud owner of a T-shirt which says the words, I've got a fat brain.
Oh, wow. Wow, 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 wow.
If you would like to play one morning, apply online at pulse1.co.uk.
With the Arnold Clark Real Sale, the Real Sale Savings ends on Monday.
Pulse 1.
This is Pulse 1 Sports.
Oh my goodness me! City have done it!
The Bantams' push for the playoffs is on, and we don't want you to miss a thing.
In towards the back post, Benteke sends
it! Yes, Steve Benson!
Catch live and exclusive full-match commentary of every game on FM, DAB Digital Radio, and Bantams Player. With Provident, putting customers at the heart of our business since 1880. Visit provident.co.uk.
This is incredible!
On 97.5 and 102.5 FM, DAB, and online at pulse1.co.uk. This is the Robbie Hunter Paul Show on Pulse 1.
Good evening, everybody. Robbie Hunter Paul here, and I'm live at the Providence Stadium with Leon Price and Luke Robinson. And we've also got the Bradford Bulls captain, Adrian Purtell. He's fought his way through the traffic to make it here with us this evening. So, ladies and gentlemen, give him a round of applause. Pert, straight off the bat, mate, we've been talking about the introduction of Wayne Bennett to as England coach or overseer, whatever title he's going to take. What are your thoughts on it, mate? Because we've got a split room here this evening. There's 50-50, I think. Those that are for it like the fact that he's such a high-quality coach, obviously the most decorated NRL coach of all time. I think the other side are traditionalists at heart, and I think they... Am I right in saying that you think there should be an English coach? He should have some English... Well, Henry's English. Does that count? He's got some English blood in him, I think. No, it doesn't. Anyway, so what are your thoughts on Wayne Bennett taking over the head honcho job for England?
Well, first of all, actually, I had the radio on the way here, and all I heard was Robbo say he doesn't like Aussies.
It's true. He said Antipodeans. I just want to remind you, Percy said Antipodeans, yeah. So both of us.
Yeah, as well.
Yeah, I don't know why I invited him on the show.
No, I think I'll probably sit on the fence as well. I don't know what the answer is, obviously not being from here, but like you say, his record speaks for itself. As far as I know, from what I've spoken to about other players, he's just a great people person, and like you say, a team like that doesn't need to be coached. So I think to get him around the best players in England as a people person, he could be great. But then on the other hand, he's not going to be here through the whole year to see what players are performing and to get to know them on a personal level before he goes into camp. So I'm probably on the fence as well, but yeah.
But it is. Come on, let's think of it from an Australian. But it's pretty harrowing, though. Will he be seen as a traitor? From an Aussie's point of view, would he be seen as a traitor?
For me personally, no. I just like watching good game footy, to be honest. And I think if we can promote the game, you know, you get one of the highest profile coaches over here and, you know, get a stronger international competition, that's the only way the game's going to grow. So hopefully it's a positive for the game.
Now, talking about Aussies, crazy Aussies. We've just been talking to Darren Rogers about, you know, doing good in the community and preparing young men and young girls for lifestyle management and role models, et cetera, et cetera. Let's talk about Mitchell Pearce. We sidestepped it last week. It's absolutely gone wild down under. You know, obviously, the head of, look, first, explain to me, what is Aussie Day? What's that all about?
Yeah, oh, mate, I don't really want to go into that either because that's a big issue at home as well. Because,
it is. So
yeah.
you're trying to sidestep. No, yeah, we need to embrace that. We need to look.
Robbie, what question are you asking here? We're talking about Australia Day or the dogs.
Yeah.
let's be clear what we're talking about.
To be honest, we're gluing them together because it's one and the same thing, isn't it?
Come on then.
Because of Australia Day, we ended up with dogs.
Okay.
Once again.
Why do Australians like dogs? Like they do.
Is it because of the sheep? 200 million sheep.
My housemate's Joel Monaghan, so I can give him a call.
Wow. Wowzers.
We've got to be careful what we're saying about this. We've got to be really careful, aren't we?
Let's be honest, was it that bad? We've all done some silly things when we've had... show me a person, you know, he who casts the first stone. Show me a person who hasn't done something stupid. Is the Australian media, because the sport is so high profile down there, is the Australian media once again blowing things out of proportion? Or is it that the temperature in the NRL down there, everything is so scrutinised, he should have known better?
I think you look at what's going on in the world as a whole and what he's done is no comparison to some of the extraordinary things that are going on in the world today. I think he has had some harmless fun. As soon as they asked him to leave, he left. And you ask any footy player, I reckon they'd probably say, oh, he hasn't done anything wrong. On the other hand, he is the Roosters captain, probably the most noted team in Sydney. He's part of the New South Wales team. And there's responsibilities that come with that. So I think they're meant to go home earlier in the night anyway. So his first mistake was breaking curfew and staying out, and not much good happens after that. So.
Robbo, Leon, what are your thoughts on it?
Obviously what he's done is wrong, you know, but it's not as big as what they're making out, basically. What he's done is wrong, like he says, he's obviously the captain of the club, he had a curfew, and he's in a position where he's a role model, isn't he? So he's, with that comes responsibility, mm-hmm. But it ain't that bad. You know, if...
But Robbo, my argument is this. We play rugby, and we've played rugby since we left school. And the things that we've seen our teammates do over the years are really, really, really crazy.
See how he says our teammates? Not me.
But what I'm saying is, to us, it's not that bad. To an average person who has nothing to do with a team sport that maybe has grown up behind a desk or going to university, and to them... who love their taking their dogs out on a walk on a Sunday. So maybe to them kind of people, that might be quite
taking
shocking.
Taking into account, I think there's a stat.
You know what I mean?
To us,
it's not bad. Yeah.
I think
them,
there's a stat that our rugby league supporters, 60% of rugby league supporters either own a cat or a dog. Show of hands in the room here. How many owns a cat or a dog?
Half.
50%?
Yeah,
we're getting into those stats. So it has impact, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, like I said previously, what he's done is obviously wrong. It's just not that big a deal. Like Leon says, the amount of things that I've seen in my time, if I wrote a book, it'd be nuts.
Are you going to write a book?
I don't think I could.
Leon's talking to me about,
I'm thinking
you know,
about
whether I should write a book.
We've been talking about this at rugby this week, and we've said, the things that we've seen. If we were in Australia, we wouldn't exist. We'd be kicked out straight away. The problem is down there.
You wouldn't be let in because what you said about Bondi Beach.
I don't know. They won't let me back in anyway. No chance. Blackpool is better though. But anyway, like I was saying, the things that we've seen go on over here, the players can get away with it over here because the media coverage is not that big. We can go into those local towns and people let us get away with whatever. But in Australia, it's the number one sport. The media is probably worse than what our media is like with the football players over here. And at the same time, they're not getting paid the wages that footballers get, 50, 60 grand a week. So they are scrutinised. And I think the worst thing about it for Mitch Pearce is the captain. So it comes out with the responsibility. So it's kind of a bit of a mess up by him, really.
Pearce, we always do a level of Aussie bashing on this show.
It's all right, I can help it, mate.
You've got thick skin, I know you have. Mate, how are you travelling? You've not played in the opening two pre-season, but as I understand it, you're in the reckoning for the game on Sunday.
Yeah, I'm all good.
I think that deserves a round of applause, ladies and gents. Captain Fantastic, the postman.
Come on, you boys.
He always delivers.
I had a shoulder operation at the end of last season, so I got my labrum sorted out, and that's a three-month recovery, so I'm aiming to be back for Sunday. I've started full training this week. I've been doing rehab ever since I had the operation, but I feel really good, and I'm quite confident that I'll be playing on Sunday afternoon and looking forward to it.
We're looking forward to it also, mate. Another pre-season down, the team's raring to go this year?
Yeah, it's a great time of year just because everyone puts in so much hard work for 3 or 4 months and you just want to be playing rugby. Our team's in a good position at the moment. I think we showed in the first two trials that, you know, we're going to have another good year. We just need to start building towards those middle eights and, you know, no greater challenge than starting off with a tough team like Feb on Sunday.
Now, let's talk about it. Obviously, the new era came in last year. A very different experience for Super League players as it was for Championship players that are at the top of the Championship looking for that sort of promotion. Do you think that puts the team in better stead? Because everybody now has experience. They've got a year under their belt. They know when the pressure's going to come, know how to better prepare. Or do they? Do you think that you know now better how to prepare for the 2016 season?
Yeah, definitely. I think it was an unknown. It was coming into that million-pound game, no one knew how to prepare for it. Like you say, it wasn't like we're going into a grand final that we'd won every game that year and we'd earned the right to win a trophy. We're playing to get, you know, promoted into the Super League. It was a weird feeling. And after that game, it was the worst I felt in a long time. So I think we know the importance of it now and how important it is to turn up week in, week out. Which was the challenge. In the Championship, you could probably get away with having half a game off or one and a half games off, but when we went back into that middle eight, we were playing quality opposition week in, week out, and we just didn't turn up for enough games in that, and I think we can learn from it.
It was strange, wasn't it? Because it was like a yo-yo performances. One week, absolutely brilliant. The following week, you know, quite surprisingly, quite disappointing. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, I think we showed it against those Super League teams. We played really well for it. For one half, and majority of the year that was good enough in the Championship. So, and that's all a lot of the guys knew through the whole year. They got used to that habit of, I think even the game against Halifax here, we were terrible for a half and we came out and played 25 minutes of the best rugby we'd played all year and just turned the game on its head. In those big games where there's a lot of pressure and you're playing against better opposition, you can't expect to do that. And like I said, hopefully we've learnt from that and we'll be better prepared this year.
Yeah, you're right. I know that Halifax game because I was sorting out an issue with the turnstile. We went at halftime. I think we were losing 14 points to 4, something like that.
I think we took a kick just before halftime.
That was it, yeah. We took a kick just before halftime. I went to sort something out in the turnstiles. I come back, turn around, walking back down the hill and it's 22 points to 14. I thought, I've missed the best part of the game.
Yeah, it was exciting. It was a good part to be playing and it's just everything was working for us. And like I said, it was like clockwork. It just showed glimpses of what we could do, but we didn't do that for enough times throughout the year for 80 minutes.
Now, I think it would be interesting insight for our supporters, both listening and here tonight, just describe what the pressure was like, not just for yourself, but for the team leading into that million-pound game. Because I can tell you what it was like in the office. And I've played in a number of big grand finals, et cetera, et cetera. But I've never experienced anything like it. What was it like from the team's point of view?
Yeah, it was... I don't know, mate. Like I said, no one really knew how to prepare for that game. I mean, we've got a coach in Jimmy Lowe's who's played in all those trophy-winning games like yourself, and he would know how to handle all that pressure better than anyone. And even himself, no one knew how to handle that game. And I think we probably missed the start of missed the start of that game, and it showed that we're probably a bit nervous. And I guess the pressure of knowing that you've got the whole club and your future riding in on 80 minutes may have become too much for a few of us there. But like I said, now that we've experienced that and we know what's coming, I 100% believe we're going to be in a position, better position this year. And I'd like to think that we get in that one of those top three spots to get automatic promotion, so we don't go anywhere near that game.
I'd love that. I'm guessing the rest of this room would also as well. Coming so close, literally tasting it, and then obviously not getting over their line. But does that make you more determined, or does it knock you sideways?
Definitely more determined. The way I felt after the game was the worst I felt after a game probably in my whole career. Even at home, I'd played in only four final series. We only got into the second round of the finals, but probably took that for granted as well. I didn't realise how important it was to play in those big games. And then coming over here and being relegated, you don't realise how much you miss playing in the best competition that's over. You watch the games that are on TV Thursday and Friday night, and you know, you want to be out there. You want to be playing against the best players in the competition. And it just really hurt. It just took so much out of me that we got so close. And, you know, in the last 10 minutes, we probably lost that game.
Because you're not playing in that higher competition, do you think that was that helped add to a couple of the lacklustre performances during the season? And do you think for 2016, you will now be better prepared to avoid that?
Yeah, for sure. I think it showed how we started the game against Leeds, even though it was a friendly. You turn up to Headingley Stadium on a Friday night and you're on TV, and you know there's going to be 20 plus thousand there pumping, and you know you've got to play your best to beat the opposition player. And it's not hard at all to get up for those games. I think when you get on a bus for three hours to go up to Whitehaven, and you hop straight off it, and it's windy and muddy, and they all want to take your head off, and there's, you know, 20 fans there that want to take your head off.
It's their just, big game, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. But in saying that, we know what's to come now, and we can't use that as an excuse, and it shouldn't have been an excuse this year either. But we know what's to come, and we've got to be more professional in those situations and turn up, play our best rugby, get the job done, and just be prepared for the middle eight.
Okay, what excites you then for 2016?
The opportunity to get back to Super League. I think our squad is very similar to the one that we had last year. The majority of the players are the same. And I think it takes time to grow a team and get used to people and know exactly what they bring to the table. And that mixed in with the disappointment of coming so close to getting promoted, I think we're going to be in good stead for the season ahead.
That's absolutely brilliant. Adrian, thank you for being with us. Coming up soon, we'll be catching up with some of the Super League's original stars in Stuart Fielding and Beg Joe Vaganar. So stay with us here on Pulse 1.
The Robbie Hunter Paul Show on Pulse 1 with Provident. Lending a helping hand since 1880. Visit provident.co.uk.
Big names and big stories from the world of rugby league. This is the Robbie Hunter Paul Show on Pulse 1.
Welcome back to the RHP Show, live at the Providence Stadium with the Earl of Rugby League, Leon Price, yes, and Luke the Jester Robinson. I'm running out of... What do you reckon, the Jester?
I get the jugular at Huddersfield.
The jugular? Explain that one.
The lads seem to think I'm a little bit harsh in my banter. I think they just get a little bit
jugular.
Upset.
I'm getting it. And they're like when you go off on one of your little rants.
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay, moving quickly along now. Our guest was the youngest member of the Awesome Foursome. But like the rest of them, he was as big as a house. Well, at least to me and Robbo anyway. He's a former GB and England International, Super League, Challenge Cup, League Leaders Shield, and three-time World Club winner. Greedy, really. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Giants, Wigan, and Bradford Bulls legend, Stuart Fearless Fielding.
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 Fielding. All wrong. It's awesome to have you here, Stu.
Pleasure to be here, Robbie.
No, absolutely brilliant.
Enjoyable.
You're bigger now than when you were playing. You just get to do more weights now?
It's either that or you've just shrunk.
I think I am shrinking.
Maybe it's with your age and you're 50.
You know what was hard case? I've got to, you've just reminded me. I've got to thank the staff up the top there for showering me with loving gifts all day long today, coming through and congratulating me on reaching 40. But one thing 50. That did surprise me, 40, one thing that did, actually Griffo, he said 50 before on the show leading up to this. One thing that did surprise me this morning, first thing this morning, so I turn on my phone, and obviously you're on these big databases for everyone, aren't you? And I get this text message from the NHS. and said, if you fall between the ages of 40 and 74, I can now get some interesting checkups for free. I thought, I've finally arrived. I've made it. I'm someone. I get those checkups for free, so cool. Stu, how you doing, mate? How you keeping? How's the body doing?
Yeah, all good, thanks, yeah. Not bad.
Actually, we've just had a buzz through. Before we get into your story, and we are going to go into your story in detail, I thought we'd get in touch with one of our old pals, and they've got Big Joe Vaganar, and let's see how he's getting on. Joseph, good morning.
Good morning, birthday boy.
Hey, give him a round of applause, ladies and gentlemen. Big Joe, just to give you some context, mate, we're set up in the Premier Bar behind the Providence Stadium. The Providence Stand in the Providence Stadium. We've got about 50 hardcore Bradford Bulls supporters here. On the panel, I've got Leon Price, Luke Robinson, and Big Stu Fielding, one of your awesome foursome teammates and three piano players.
My favorite people of all time.
Who, Robbo?
Mate, no, what the other three.
Your other friend. How's that beautiful New Zealand summer morning going on right there? The sun is shining, it must be.
Yeah, it's not too good. It's only 23 degrees, 8:30 in the morning. I've just finished my run. I've got to go for early run just because it's a little bit cooler. So, yeah, it's not too bad.
Joe, how's that big mansion of yours? To paint the picture for everyone here, Joe's got this big mansion. It sits on top of the hill. It overlooks the Waitemata Harbour into the Auckland city centre. And how's that big mansion of yours working out?
Yeah, now the bank still owns it. I've got another 25 years to pay it off. So, it's not too good. But it's not bad, especially when the sun's shining. I've still got another 25 years of my life to pay it off, pay my debts. That's what happens when you play for free at Bradford. You play for the love of the. I played for the love of the game while Stu and Leon was taking all the money.
You're true. It's so true there. As our CEO now, I can look back at the figures. Joe, what are you doing with yourself nowadays? Why don't you update the Bradford public and the West Yorkshire public? Sorry.
Besides all my training, I ventured into a youth trust. So I started youth trust just to help out our young people here, and I've also jumped into leasing machines from diggers and trucks and pumps, etc. There's in New Zealand, in Auckland in particular, where there's not enough homes. There's a lot of roads and houses being built, so I thought I'd jump in the game and try and make a dollar. 4 years ago, if you asked me what a digger was, I'd say it's that big machine that scrapes dirt up. But I've had to learn my way in, and I've got some good guys around me to support me. So, yeah.
Mate, do you actually do any of the physical manhandling work, or are you the guy that stands there with the hard hat on just pointing out where all the roads need to go?
No, I've got all my dirty PPE stuff, they call it, and I stand there, but Because of my little pinky, I damaged while I was playing. My doctor said, don't do too much hard work. Just bark orders.
You got to understand, ladies and gentlemen, I don't know if you've seen that little pinky of Joe's, but it is the most messed up thing you've ever seen in the world. Everything out is kind of straight.
Hey, Robbie, I've got feelings, Robbie. I've got feelings, all right? So I can hear what you're saying.
I hear you. Actually, Leon's trying to do a bit of an impersonation of your little pinky as we speak right now.
It's worse than mine.
I still think you've got his.
Yeah, got me well covered.
Got you. You could do what Rob Parker does, you know. He cut his off. Not having that.
No, it's my finger's fine. It could be worse. I could have been filing down my dead skin on my foot, like other people I know, or I could have pink feet, pink flat feet.
That's a reference to Stuart, ladies and gentlemen.
Hey, I thought we had a deal, Joe. Thanks.
The front rowers deal. Mate, if you could pick a moment throughout your career here in England, what would it be?
It's pretty tough. With all the stuff that we went through, all the moments that we went through. But if we're talking on the field stuff, you'd have to say, pick any of the grand finals. I think one in particular with the Leeds, being in 2003. That was a special one. But off the field, I think it was all the moments we shared in the changing rooms. Those nights before the grand finals, when there was the four of us, the three of you guys there, and the ghost that would go out and have a dinner out and play some poker at Cedar Court before we take. Oh, it wasn't Cedar Court, but you know those moments that we shared together off the field was pretty special. So, yeah.
They were some wonderful moments. We do like to share them here on the show also. Mate, you got two of the old crew living back in New Zealand near you. Biggs Les, Leslie Vinicolo and Shantane Hape. Do you keep in touch with them? What are they up to now?
Yep, Les is he's the director of rugby for First 15. First 15 in New Zealand is school rugby, and it's quite big in New Zealand.
Someone employed him.
You know, someone employed him. They understand broken English here in New Zealand. So, he got his title as director of rugby, and Shantane is just started on last Friday as the marketing for sales for the New Zealand Warriors. So he's selling stuff.
Yeah, do you still spend time down at New Zealand Warriors?
I have a table, where I take clients up on a during the games. Mm-hmm. So other than that, I go and I'm a fan. So I don't do anything else. But however, today that we've got the Nines starting this weekend
in Auckland. So that's
NRL nine. So
who's a favourite to win that?
Well, the Warriors are always a favourite. We've always got a really good team on the board, on the sheet. And we've got two of us, a Sheck, and who's joined him and Isaac Luke. But in particular for the Nines, two of us, a Sheck. Sean Johnson's cleared. He's playing this weekend, and we've got other exciting young fast players. I didn't make the cut this week, but I'll try again next year. So Warriors always, you know, home crowd favourites, but it's an awesome weekend. The difference with Nines and the Sevens, the Rugby Sevens, is that a lot of the Perth fans here, they associate that, you know, they've got their stars of NRL Nines that they follow week in, week out, where the Sevens, you only see these players once a year, and you only normally typically know the New Zealand players. So there's a lot more passion, I reckon, in the Rugby Nines and the League Nines.
Well, it seems like you've been listening to all the marketing going out. You've completely sold. Big Joe, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show, mate. Thank you for taking your time. I know you've woken up extra early, gone for your big. Was it 5, 10K, 20K run? What was it?
It was 5Ks forward, and then I did the last 5Ks backwards, so it's pretty intense.
Well, thank you very much for being there. Make sure we give your love to your family, and make sure you give my mum, my baby, and my muko a kiss next time you see them, okay?
Will do, mate. We're over there in the weekend. And don't worry about that, Robbie. I'm still waiting for my ticket to fly over to support my beloved Bulls. You know, a lot of clubs...
Oh, you just had a round of O's go on here. Oh,
yes. Robbie.
I think everybody in here is going to chip in, I think.
Is anybody on the panel still awake, Robbie, when you usually put people to sleep while you're commentating?
Well, I've got half the room asleep, but actually that's because you've been talking. Anyway, brother.
I've got work in New Zealand, so I'll leave you alone. Love you all, guys.
Thank you, guys. A round of applause, ladies and gentlemen. And there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Big Joe Vagana, absolutely brilliant. Look, we've all got a Big Joe speech, haven't we? Oh, a little Big Joe story. Even Robbo, and you didn't even play with him. What's your Big Joe story?
As you can see, my hands all mangled up because I encountered him once on the field. So I played against you in the semi-final at Galf Farm. Obviously, they were putting me on at nine just to basically cause a bit of havoc when the forwards got tired, but the Bulls lads didn't seem to get tired. So they took advantage of me, and yeah, Joe just literally trampled over the top of me and broke my hand. So,
Leon?
My story of Big Joe is probably...
Well, you can't share it.
No, I can do. We Big Joe started playing cards. We had a poker school at the Bulls. But what we didn't realise is that Big Joe had been playing poker for about 10, 15 years. And we were new to this game, and I just always remember thinking, right, I can take Big Joe here. And every single time, 10 times out of 10, he'd always have an hand to beat me. And the money that we've lost to that guy in poker over the years is a lot of money, and it's due. So,
without doubt. Do you know that mansion that we're talking about? He's saying, we paid for it.
So he may not have got any pay in his contract, but actually he took it in a second way.
Oh,
he
definitely took
it. Oh, and you as well, Robbie. Don't you well, sit there like it wasn't you as well.
Hey, I'm just, I'm just playing. I'm just...
Manipulation, yeah, I'm just saying
it's
anything.
Called. I'm not saying anything. I've got a Big Joe story. When I left the Bradford Bulls, me and Joe, obviously our families are quite close, and me and Joe had this pact between each other, and it was, you don't run at me because you're a giant, and I won't run at you because I'm quick. And we had this pact, and it worked out well for the first couple of games. And then in the following year, well, what happened? Big Joe gets, I end up in a hooker, so I'm around the middle of the park a little more for the Giants. And Big Joe winds himself up, and I start moving towards him, and he gets the big people's elbow out. You know how he used to lead with that? Mm. Had the ball in one hand, used to lead with that. Honestly, all I saw, I was 10 feet in the air, looking down at Joe as he's giggling. Running past, and I'm in bits and pieces, and I just said to it, right, you're going to get it. So I said to him as I was running back, as I was pulling myself together and running back on side, every time you go to marker, every time you point that way, I'm going to make you chase me. I'm going to make you work for marker. And for big blokes like Joe, he liked to have a rest, you know, make a tackle, have a rest for the rest of the set, and make another tackle the next game. But I didn't. For two sets complete, every time he pointed, I made him run out and made him work. When he got back in the line, I passed whoever was on the ball, made him tackle. He made 12 tackles in two sets. At the end of it, I could see him blowing, so I thought, now I'm going to have a run. And I'm telling him, you point right, I'm going to run. You're going to have to chase me. And he pointed right, he chased me. He must have thought, a rush of blood, a little bit of adrenaline. So I skipped out of acting half. He reached out for me, grabbed me by the collar of my shirt, but I felt him grab me, ducked back under his arm to try and pull myself out of it. The back of my collar got twisted around his middle finger, and pop. He goes, you popped my finger. And I was giggling that time. I was giggling. Stu Fielding.
Yes.
Robbie Hunter. Paul.
See,
I need say no more.
Robbie Hunter Paul, actually, I'm not 40 years of age, because Robbie Hunter Paul is only 4 years old. Five years old, sorry. Sorry.
She's listening. She's listening.
She is. And Robbie Paul is 35. Anyway, Stu, brilliant to have you on the show. What are you doing with yourself now, mate?
Just say, basically. No,
that's it.
Sort of after finishing rugby, it's a transitional period. It's a hard period. I found it quite a hard period. So just trying to find a direction then. You know, kind of the usual cycle, isn't it? That you finish school, you decide you're not sure what to do, and then you go to uni or whatever it is, and you find that direction. So suddenly get to that place at like 34, 35, it's not the nicest place to be, but that's kind of where I am at the minute. I'm just looking for direction.
You've got a couple of businesses and you own some property, but you're also working on the, and this is the thing that cracks me up, because I know another player, former player that works on the disciplinary panel, and Stu's on that panel. You know, these enforcers that get sent off and get penalised and knock people's... To be honest, actually, it's Paul Dixon I'm talking about, and those that are Bradford Northern fans know exactly. Another enforcer, you know, enforced by punching people in the head gets sent off.
I've got a better one than that. Danny Sculthorpe, isn't he on it? Danny Sculthorpe?
Yeah,
he is. He was worse than that, wasn't he?
Well, actually, it might make sense. These guys probably know what... To get away with, what people are trying to get away with.
Well, who do you catch? Who do you employ to catch a robber?
A robber.
Not a robber, certainly not. A robber. So, I was involved in that. It's not consistent. It's, you know, you're there five, six times a year, but it gave me that way to sort of get back into rugby league. Because what I mean is, after I finished, I coached at Huddersfield, and it certainly wasn't the right time for me to be coaching and be in rugby league. I needed a break. I kind of fell out of love with rugby, if you will. And so kind of being able to just get back into it, I've started to enjoy it again. And I really enjoyed the disciplinary stuff. It was enjoyable.
Sick. He's got to be a little bit sick if you enjoy that part of the game. Now, you say you fell out of love a little bit, but do you think that comes down because, look, your passion was playing. You went to Huddersfield to do a job for two seasons, and you think that you fell out of passion for the game because you were unable to do that job?
I think it's when you don't leave on your terms. I mean, we saw Big Johnny sat here earlier, and he left on his terms, and we had a lot of chats about them. What I mean is he finished playing when he wanted to finish playing. So he said, you know, he didn't have to finish, you know, through injury or whatever it was. He said, you know, this is my time to stop playing. So it was on his terms. When I, you know, finished, it was through an injury in my knee, an infection, which is very, very, very rare. And I didn't want to stop playing. And I still believe, but for the knee, I could still be playing now. So it's that conflict there. And that's why, again, kind of follow up lovely with the game. And it gives you a massive void to fill.
And now, you know, a couple of weeks ago, Ryan Bailey came out in the papers saying that he was outspoken about depression, and it's something that's very serious in the game. I'm going to throw obviously you're talking about falling out of love with the game and going through some hard times. Yep. Can I throw this to the whole panel? Have you guys personally ever dealt with that type of depression?
It's very prominent in rugby league. I'm not sure why that is, but I don't know if it's because of the pressure that goes with it, you're in the public eye, or whether you're programmed from a very young age to push yourself and push your body to the limit. And it's not only pushing your body, it'll be pushing your mind to the limit to be the best player. And I don't know what it is. I don't know the answers, but there's a lot of people that I've personally played with that have gone through tough times, mm-hmm. You know, whether it's through injury or having to retire or whatever it may be. But it's very, very prominent in rugby league.
Leon, what are your thoughts on it?
Oh, it's massive, massive within rugby league. I think what you see now is the first batch of players that have come straight from school, straight into full-time rugby. So beforehand, your players that played professional sports, professional rugby league, they may have been an electrician, may have been a plasterer, but they had a trade. So you want basically a full-time Super League player, but we're my age group are the first people that have come from straight from school, straight into rugby. So basically, rugby's all we've ever known. And what we've got to do is make sure that these players like myself and like Stuart, well, I've got an education, I've got something for after rugby, which I don't think that we've really focused on too much during our career, is to make sure we've got something after rugby. And I think now we're starting to see the side effects of that. You know, your cases like Terry Newton and things like that, there is a lot of cases out there that I know of, that these boys will know of depression and the lads getting themselves in a bad way.
I've given this a lot of thought. To try and figure out, you know, why it is that this happens to, it's not just professional rugby league players, but a lot of other professional sportsmen that play sort of high intensity, high profile, very dynamic sports. And one of the things that we know is, like, day in, day out, whether you're in the gym or on the training pitch, whether you're doing skills or whether you're doing contact work, there's a lot of adrenaline rushes. There's a lot of endorphin releases at the end of a very hard workout. Now, when you get to the back end of your career, and let's say, for example, you're forced to stop that, is it like a drug? You know how you hear that druggies have they relapse and they need that fix, that high. We get that. We effectively get that natural high from competing day in, day out. Do you think that could play its part? And what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's all going to be a part of that, but surely one of the biggest parts is the worry. It's not football. You don't get 70 grand a week. Most, even the top players, they earn some even better money now, certainly in Australia. But can they retire at the end and sit there and say, you know, I'm not under that pressure to earn? And like you said there, you have the transition from, like Leon said, from going from school, most of these new players, all they've done is played rugby league. And a lot of them don't get too much in place for after, then suddenly wham, what are you going to do then? That pressure is a massive pressure, and most have families. It's a big void. And I think there's, you know, there's been a lot of it made of it recently, and the state of mind thing and all the rest, but I think that's just a scratch in the surface. Mm-hmm. How many people, you know, I think the odds of, you know, the stats would be 10, 20, 30 times the amount of people that have actually come out, because it's not something that people want to speak about. Mm.
Especially in a hyper-masculine environment like rugby is.
It is, yeah. And, you know, I certainly can touch on that and be honest with that. And it's probably the first time I can touch on it publicly, and that I had the same thing. Mm-hmm. And that was sort of, I'd moved from Huddersfield. I'd moved, obviously, to coaching only through necessity, and I had a contract. And Paul Anderson, actually, we spoke about it again tonight, this evening. He realised the problems I was having, and they were quite severe. And he pushed me towards Sporting Chance.
All right, brilliant. Well, actually, I want to pick up on that. Coming after the break, we'll hear more from Stu and exactly that topic and the boys, and we're also looking forward to my Super League and Championship picks of the weekend, the games to watch, all that and more coming next.
The Robbie Hunter Paul Show on Pulse 1 with Provident, lending a helping hand since 1880. Visit provident.co.uk.
This is the Robbie Hunter Paul Show on Pulse 1.
Welcome back to the final segment of the Robbie Hunter Paul Show, live from the Provident Stadium. We have with us Stuart Fielding, Leon Price and Luke Robinson. Stu, we were just picking up, we just want to pick up, you were just talking about your experiences with Sporting Chance.
Yeah, certainly Blue identified some problems I was having, and they were quite deep problems. Depression and things like that from playing. I didn't want to have left rugby league as in playing, but I was coaching, and so I didn't get that break, and it was a dark time for me. And he realised that and pushed. I wouldn't say pushed. I'd say forced. He kind of made me go, and that was a conversation I had outside here earlier. And I've phoned him recently and told him that, and I'm probably, you know, massively in debt for him for doing that. At the time, I didn't agree. I never really liked to do what Blue tells me, but it made a massive difference. It made me, you know, they got me in touch with people that helped me deal with it and come through the other side.
Now, that's an interesting aspect of it, actually. You said you don't like listening to what Blue has to say to you. Now, you played alongside him. You were the part of the amazing, awesome foursome. What was it like joining Huddersfield? And obviously, the banter that you and Blue had throughout your career here at Bradford, it was just used to a lot of the time we're at each other all the time, but the dynamic had completely changed because you've now got a responsibility to your teammates to show this man respect, or do you?
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, certainly Leon, we have a lot of stories and unfortunately we can't say most of them.
Yeah, I'm sure you'd like to know.
I wish we could. That's why when I came in, I was watching from over there. I saw Blue sat here with Leon on the other side.
I bet Blue, you're listening, aren't you? You're thinking, what is he going to say?
I just thought all we need now is Lee Gilmore, and literally Blue would have holes in him. He would have been machine gunned because we have a lot of stories. But funnily you should mention that, because sort of not a job interview, but I met Blue at the Cedar Court Hotel in Huddersfield when he was seeing if I wanted to come to Huddersfield. And the first kind of, along those lines, the first kind of things he said was, you know, if you come to us, no. You know, all those things, no. But I respected that. And like you said, he's the boss, and you've got to set that tone of respect. And you can't, certainly I wouldn't have been able to do that if I'd have been saying all the stories. But on that point, a lot of the stories were kind of old school stories. So the team then, sort of Robbo and everyone like that, they wouldn't have really understood them.
Yeah, yeah.
The days, the stories from sort of Leon, JP, Brian Mack, all these funny stories.
You had to be there.
Kind of, yeah. Or certainly been around that at the time.
I think it's a hard case because actually when Baloo joined Huddersfield in 2007, he had the same conversation with me.
He had it with me as well in 2006 when I joined Saints.
Serious?
Yeah, because he said, hey, up, there'll be no more of that taking of me. They don't do that here, so don't you be starting it.
You've got that accent down pat. The Ponty accent.
Hey, up.
Robbo, then on that note, Robbo, you play alongside Mr. Fielding for a season. We were just talking about it off air that Stu, known as an enforcer in the game, Luke O'Donnell, another enforcer in the game. You lost them towards the back end of the 2000 and was it 8 seasons?
13.
Oh God, I'm that old.
How old? Yeah,
I am that old. Yeah, 2013. Like no, it was when I was there, wasn't it? As in the administration capacity. Just describe what was it like losing two enforcers at that time, because you had won the League Leaders Shield,
yep.
Or as the hubcap, as a lot of people like to call it.
Yep.
But then you went into the playoffs without your enforcers.
Yeah, well, basically a lot of people have asked me over the years, you know, what do we lack in them playoff games? And in that particular year, we had a great year. And that's what we lacked, really. We went in, we lost not only Luke O'Donnell, but we lost you as well at a similar time. And you take them out of his pack. We had an extremely good pack at the time, but a lot of them were ball-playing forwards. And when you lose your sort of two enforcers,
that's a nice way of saying soft. They play a different style. There's different style. I'm only kidding. Big girl, all the rest of you.
We lost us to enforcers that were a little bit puddled, really. You know, the Uko O'Donnell was a wonderful shilling, and neither still, if I'm being honest.
And he's still not. But we love him for that.
Look, when we went to Leeds, for example, and I'll be honest, if he had to review his tackle of Chris Clarkson in his discipline, he'd be banned himself for about 5 years.
That was actually legal, Rob.
But he absolutely smashed Clarkson and then stood up and just basically confronted the Leeds pack, and then Luke O'Donnell ran in. And obviously, I'm just sort of stood behind clapping, thinking, I'm kind of being looked after here. But when we lost them two players, it crippled the season, really, because we lost a really influential part of his pack. And not only his pack, but his team. But he's actually my bodyguard, because when we went on Mad Monday that year as well, me and Carl Wood, we'd like to dance a lot to me and Carl Wood, the little lad. So I'm dancing at my nightclub dance floor, and big, massive five Scottish guys came over and just started ripping us costumes apart. And me and Carl Wood are like looking up at them. I said, listen, boys, you don't want to do this. I think they thought just me and Carl Wood were by yourself. I said, don't do this. Anyway, I think they got the drift. Went out of out of the darkness appeared Stu, dressed as a Greek god with sandals on, no top on. Just rounded these five Scottish lads up, took them to a corner. They just shrunk, did these Scottish lads. So anyway, I went over and said, took my wig and said, I told you, put my wig back on, started dancing. So it was like I had a personal bodyguard.
Wasn't it an Oompa Loompa wig? Dressed as an Oompa Loompa.
I was an Oompa Loompa, yeah. An Oompa Loompa.
Green wig and orange paint.
Yeah, it took me a green Oompa Loompa wig, but Stu managed to get it back for me.
Look, it must be a thing that Stu has in his repertoire, because he was my bodyguard as well. But actually, the story that I've got is on the field of play. 2003 Grand Final. I come on off the bench to give Jimmy a rest, because Jimmy was like 48 at that time. The first scrum I go to, the Wigan pack must have had a call that every single one of them, in the first scrum that Robbie comes on, bash him.
It was Terry Newton.
I played
it. It was
that
more
game.
Than Terry. There was about five hands that flew in. So we go down
maybe
to
just quick.
It was all of them. They had a call. I hold nothing against Terry. It was all of them that punched me. So I went down, and these five hands just come out of nowhere. Boom. And the referee pulled the scrum out. It was, for some reason, the ball didn't get put in properly or for whatever. Anyway, Fielding stepped up and he put his big finger in all of their chests and he said, anyone touches him, you're just going to have it. And they all, like you said, they all shrunk. And I was sitting behind Stu going, that's how I roll. How you like them apples? I popped my collars up then. I was 10, man.
It was not good for me, because I was opposite scrum half in that game, watching it, thinking, oh, no. That's my pack that's shrinking here.
Don't kick off.
It just comes back to that the forwards, you need to look after your halves. And one of the key rules is that you need to look after your nine and your halves.
Oh, here we go.
Happy birthday to you.
Okay, so what we're having here, ladies and gentlemen, is a impromptu
midget
birthday song. And the chairman's at the
happy
pack.
50th, Rob.
Chairman Mark Green, Rob Parker's in the back. They've all got guilty looks on their faces. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. I appreciate that. I don't celebrate birthdays for no particular reason. It's just that Mum and Dad didn't love me as much as they loved Henry. I know, it's terrible, isn't it? It's terrible. We were talking rugby. Look, Stu, stick up for me.
I've got a good fielding story. Robbie, I've got a good fielding story.
Oh, we love good fielding story.
So me, Gilly and Fielding Carr, we'd been down to see Henry. We'd been at Gloucester for the weekend when he played for Gloucester. So we're on the way home, back up the M62 or whatever the motorway is. And Fielding's asleep on the back. So me and Gilly, I'm driving, Gilly's there. Fielding's fully asleep across the back. So Gilly looks at me and goes, puts a sign, like a little wink sign, and said, put slant brakes on. So I said, right, so keep driving. I got about 80 mile an hour. Boom, put brakes on as fast as I could. Fielding rolls in between the middle of the seats, gets lodged in between. He can't get out. He can't get out for ages. He comes up and he goes, who did that? Who did that? I said, Stu, with that car there, it just made me swerve and I had to brake. He said, Elron, get up to the side of them now. I'm going to kill him. So I drove up to the side of this car, and Fielding pulls window down. He's going, I'm going to kill you. I'm going to kill you. This couple had no idea what reason he's
telling them. This poor couple from the Midlands.
But me and Gilly were crying with laughter for about 10 minutes after. I couldn't stop laughing. Oh. Brilliant, absolutely brilliant.
The things they did to you, Stu.
It wasn't just me, there's a lot more.
Hey,
No, good old days.
To each other.
Yeah, you're right. Okay. Now, Stu, let's get back on to the modern game, the modern era. What have you made of this, the new era? 2015 was the introduction. Remember that you're working for the RFL, so you got to be sensitive in your description.
Technically, I'm not.
You're neither here nor there.
I'm objective.
In that grey area.
Yeah.
What's your take on the new era of the sport?
I think it's in a transition. You've got the big part of, like you said, you've gone from where you have part-time players or trades and things from when me and Leon started, and then now you've got full-time players. But what I mean is, you used to have all the talent coming this way. Mm-hmm. So you had all the Antipodeans coming here, well, for money, Robbie.
Whoa. I said, I'm English.
But now it's the other way. Everyone's the talent's going the other way. So it's kind of the transition now of where you're trying to get those base players, the English base players, up to standard. And that's the kind of hard part, and it's still not anywhere near its kind of the end and where it needs to be. Mm-hmm. Like I said, it's a transition, and when that transition will end, I'm not too sure.
Talking specifically, Ian Lanigan, your old chairman down at Wigan, and obviously he was chairman when you were there also, Robert? No?
No,
he came later.
Morris.
Was it Morris there? Morris. Oh, okay. Morris. Well, Ian Lanigan commented this week that the new system, a Super League club, needs to be relegated this week, meaning a championship this year, meaning a championship club needs to be promoted to ratify to